The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's your Pod Blast! As Alex talks the possible death of Test cricket, Rashid's batting breathes new life into his career. I give a delayed response to the creepy undertaker of cricket, Mark Nicholas. And why is Compton looking so stiff? Any chance of a resurrection? Or is it too much of an undertaking?
There's only some urgency. I saw you out there always taking the covers off yourself at one stage, you see.
I shouldn't be out there doing the official's job. I'm not sure why they, you know, it wasn't raining, so I'm not sure why the covers weren't being removed. You know, I can't understand why it took so long to get the game started, regardless of the position that we were in.
Well, it's your Pod Blast. We started with a clip there from Andy Flower. Did you pick it, listener?
Yeah.
He's the coach of the England Test Match team now. And that was him shortly after the fourth or fifth final day of England-New Zealand up at Headingley being interviewed by the venerable Aggers.
So venerable, isn't he? I like that a lot. I'd like to rip the covers off sometimes when there's nothing going on. No one's getting, it's not raining, but they're not doing anything about it. Well, I might have an inspection at 20 past. Oh, we've had a look and we could have another one at 22.
Yeah, I will look forward to seeing Andy Flower the next time England are desperately holding on to a draw to try and win the Ashes because they're one ahead and Australia are all over them, berating both groundsmen and umpires, desperate to get the game back on. I'm sure there's absolutely nothing that Andy Flower said just then that was complete bollocks.
I like the idea that he might be good. I mean, I like the beginning of it. It was very true. I'd like to take up, but going, you know, even if it was, even if we're desperately searching for a draw, I just think fair's fair, and I love cricket. I did like that, Al. That was a very lovely little moment. I'm sorry I was a little hoarse at the start of the show. Sorry to the listener about that. Just a little hoarse. But I'm back.
Good. Let's start with England-New Zealand and let's be positive at the beginning because it's a strange test match and series win insofar as there's been a lot of criticism in the Twitter sphere and in life.
Oh, there's so much criticism in life, isn't there? And I try and stay away from it. I cocoon myself in a kind of a sheath of not listening to it. Certainly about my personal life.
But positives, Ross.
Positives. It's interesting you say we should open up with a bit of positivity because England haven't been doing that, have they? They've been turgid, I think we'd have to say.
That's a fantastic segue. And this is the whole Compton-Cook-Trot axis that we've been talking about for a while. Can I take a slight detour here on selection for a moment?
Yeah, we're going to go positive because we did say we'd go positive and we've gone immediately a little bit negative and no. I want to bring it back round.
No, we're going to be positive.
Okay.
Selection is the easiest and often the most fun thing to talk about.
Yeah.
And if you listen to most of the podcasts or you read the articles, you know, is Compton going to be picked? Is he not going to be picked?
Yeah.
How are they going to reshuffle? That's interesting. But it's 1993 Ashes interesting. In the sense that it's not necessarily healthy for the England team. They're writing about a story that doesn't really exist anymore.
Oh, great, great. Yeah, I like this.
So my question for you, Ross, is Compton, after all that, going to be picked in the Ashes?
That's great. I like that. I like you saying it's old hat, you know, they're like the journalists are trying to be Marty McFlys and go back to 1955 or whatever to trudge up old stories. Well, actually, what's the right here, right now? Well, let's talk the past. Let's talk Seleccione. I think Nick Compton deserves a little bit more, actually. I think he deserves a couple more tests, certainly. And against any other nation, he would get it. But unfortunately, the Ashes, no matter who the 11 players out there wearing the baggy green are, is just a big deal. It's a big deal financially. It's got such a rep around it. There's almost more furore and build-up to it, then the quality of cricket might turn out to show.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But just on Compton for a moment.
Yeah.
The real problem he's got is not so much his form, which was poor in this two-match series, but yes, was excellent against New Zealand in New Zealand.
True.
But the player who's not playing, looming over everyone like a massive, softly spoken South African that he is. One of the all-time England greats, and we'll return to this theme, Kevin Peterson.
Yes.
Let's be honest, if Mark Lathwell was next in line, and he's getting pretty old now,
yeah,
then people wouldn't be clamouring for Compton, would they?
Well, I think, yeah, that's true. I mean, it could be one of two things. If Peterson's out, there's a Peterson-shaped hole in your whole damn team, which obviously does. I thought you were talking about Carberry, in fact, who could be the next man in.
Carberry's in terrible form.
He is.
You can't buy
that's a long shot. Can he not? No, you think he could. Yeah, I like that turn of phrase. But Peterson, yeah, he's out of the time. You know, it's not, in a way, though, it's completely not to do with that. In a way, I think Compton would be dropped instantly if there was another young buck ready to open straight away who we felt was ready. Now, there's lots of good players
there
in
is,
county cricket.
There?
I think there's a lot of good
His
players.
His name's Joe Root.
He is, but he seems to be pretty good at five, pretty good at six, too. And I agree. Now, one thing is people are saying, oh, he doesn't like the new ball. Well, he's always been an opening batsman for the whole of his life.
He's come in against the new ball.
That's taken.
Oh, you're talking about Compton or Root?
Root.
Yeah, he's come in against the new ball even while he's been playing for England. That has absolutely no standing. We don't have new ball and old ball players.
Yeah.
That's completely bizarre. This is your top six or seven batsmen in the country.
Yeah.
They've got to be able to play a ball that's got a bit of shine on it.
But I think, conservative as they are, England very much adopt the if it ain't broke, don't fix it policy. And for a man to come in absolutely cracking form, be playing perfectly well at five or six, it's not like them to want to shove him up the order. That's just not how they roll.
Yeah.
So I just think if there was another batsman who was right there ready to open up, if you know we were talking a couple of years on for Robson at Middlesex, it's too soon for a lot of players. There doesn't seem to be an obvious replacement, and that's why he might just get the nod, although with a heavy heart, I'd have to say, and I think he might be a little unfairly treated, were he to be dropped. I think he probably just about should be, and they should shove Root up there.
It's part of the problem that people don't like watching Compton. I mean, people respect Trott, but it only took that 11 off 69 balls on that evening of the penultimate day of the last Test match for people to jump immediately back onto his pack and start dry humping it.
Yeah.
He is not loved, he's respected. Compton certainly isn't loved, and he's not respected yet either, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's just pretty dour. Having said that, Cook didn't bat as we would expect Cook to. Can we take positives from the series? I think we're taking Cook for granted.
I think
he's
we have
phenomenal.
He is terrific, and that was a great reminder. Positives. He played fantastically well.
And I think it was a positive move by him not to enforce the follow-on, because he was there and he's calculating. He's taking a risk insofar as he allows New Zealand potentially to bat their way back into the game. So I don't think he did take the risk-averse route at all. And he's calculating that Swan is going to do well in the turning pitch, which he does. So I don't think that decision is baffling at all. What was baffling was the decision to push all the way to 460. But when they get bowled out cheaply again, it looks great, you know, with hindsight, to say they could have declared for less.
Well, it's the argument. It's there was a, I can't remember who it was on the Switch Hit podcast. Do tune in, also a good podcast. They mentioned that you can't say that winning is everything. They said something like, if 100 times you ski down a sheer rock face, and you live once, that doesn't make it a good decision. Well, that analogy doesn't really reflect the situation whatsoever. The fact is, if we hadn't won, if we hadn't done this, well, you know, and what's it they say? If your auntie had bollocks, he'd be your uncle. And now it's time to get negative with Alex.
Okay, I apologise for this, but I haven't had much sleep. There's a coach of a baseball team out in America called Charlie Manuel. He's the coach of the Philadelphia Phillies. And the Philadelphia Phillies have in recent times had the spending power of your Manchester United and your New York Yankees.
Yes.
The Phillies won a World Series back in 2008, but they haven't won since. They've got an absolutely stellar squad. And there's a movement within Philadelphia, groups of people who think that the Phillies do well despite Charlie Manuel. Do England do well at test level despite Andy Flower? Can I begin with my evidence?
Yeah.
Or can I? Shall I just
interrupt
you?
No, go on.
That's very rude of me.
No, no, I like it. You were on, you know, you had momentum like a van filled with bricks. Go on.
I'm going to begin with some of the stranger decisions over the course of the last couple of years under his tenureship.
Yes, okay, I like
this. We'll call this perhaps the case for the prosecution.
Can I respond to each one?
Not in turn.
No.
I would prefer your responses be reserved for the end.
Okay.
Your submissions can then...
That's fine. Oh, because that's the way they do it in the court of law, is that right?
That's right.
All right, okay, great.
So let's begin with Swan, who's just got the a tenfer. At Headingley.
I know where you're going with this.
Well, last year against South Africa at Headingley, remind me again who they dropped.
Swan.
Okay. Number two, the first game against Pakistan in the UAE.
Yep.
Well, first of all, who would you say was the unexpected standout player for England in the UAE?
Was it Finn?
I'm
trying to cast my
mind. I mean, I would argue it was Panesar.
Okay.
He did brilliantly.
Yeah.
Who isn't picked for that first game in the UAE?
Panesar.
And who is picked? Interesting one. I had to look this one up.
Oh, no, I don't know.
Tremlett.
Oh.
Didn't take a wicket.
Sure.
Was injured. Yeah. Went home injured straight after.
Okay.
Panesar gets picked, does very well in the second and third, and then much closer. England lost that first game by 10 wickets. The next two, the batting collapsed, but they were within 70 or 75.
Yeah.
All right. So that's not a good decision. India, 2012. First test. Who do they leave out again? In India.
Panesar.
Yep. Who do they pick?
Brezhnev.
Brezhnev, who's injured and has to go for surgery and barely takes a wicket through the whole series.
Brezhnev. I feel like I'm being told off like the head teacher's going, who did it? Who did it? Who's been a naughty boy? And I'm going, me, sir.
Somebody keeps knocking over the wickets during his run through.
Mm.
And then a technical change is made to shorten his run up.
Yep.
What has just recently been reversed after just one series of that experiment?
That run-up.
Yeah, that run-up. Finn's run-up. That technical tinkering.
That technical tinkering.
Maybe David Saker. May not be Flower.
Who knows?
Final point. KP, last summer, doesn't play in the game against South Africa at the end of that series.
Mm.
Okay? Which is an important game because potentially that could have drawn the series.
Yeah.
So it's huge not to have KP for that game. He's not there because he's in a dispute with the management, which is in itself a management failure, to my mind.
Yep.
They say we pick the same squad for 2020 and 50 over, so he doesn't go to the World Cup.
Yeah.
Let's just examine that for a moment. Hales, who we said before is in the top five in the world as a 2020 batsman, is nowhere near the England one-day setup. Bapara is getting picked for the Champions Trophy. Okay, so explain to me why that was a line in the sand that they had to hold with their best player against South Africa last summer. So I could go on.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about any more examples. I've got to stop somewhere.
Sure.
But this is my point. At my reckoning, and this isn't a particularly original thought, the current England team have four players who would walk into any England test side. And they are Cook, Peterson, Anderson and Swan.
Yep.
They're all-time greats.
Agreed.
If you're not number one in the world consistently, when you've got potentially the finest England side ever, and these things are going wrong, then it's a management failure, isn't it? It's not a player failure.
Well, listen, thank you, my honourable friend, for bringing that to the court. I would try and defend him like this. Now, I think it is a failure of management. I would agree, first and foremost, to fall out with Peterson, your best player. However, Peterson is a difficult fish to manage and has to be managed in certain ways. You know, power struggle is a difficult thing in management. No matter, you know, what sort of manager you are, whether you're in a management consultancy, sometimes I pretend to be at home, or you're playing in sport in whatever capacity. And you have to draw a line in the sand. It was a draw in the line in the sand moment. And we don't know what went behind closed doors.
Okay.
But if you're going to draw a line in the sand, sadly, sometimes you do it with your best players.
What do you think about the reluctance to pick Panesar?
The reluctance to pick Panesar, you know, I have to sympathise. You don't know when Panesar's going to turn up or not. Don't tell me he's like, oh, he's so good, though. He's that natural talent. You know, Shane Warne said about him once, he hasn't played however many tests, 25 at the time. He's played his first test 25 times. And unfortunately, that fact followed him around for a while because he was absolutely right. Panesar bowls exactly the same every game, and sometimes it comes off, and sometimes it doesn't come off, and we will never know why or how. And I like him very much, but he is Mr. Inconsistency.
What about picking these injured bowlers? You know, be it Tremlett, be it Bresnan, be even Broad against India.
What I would say is there is a simple answer. And that's it's ridiculous. Bresnan should never have been picked if he knew he was injured. But I don't think he would have picked him if he knew he was injured. So we're sort of going backwards and reflexively going, why, when he knew he was injured? But I think the simple answer is he can't have known he was injured. It must have been something that, you know, in sports science, a world in which we're not familiar with totally.
Speak for yourself.
Okay. He can't have known. He must have been given the information that he was fit enough to play. And sometimes it doesn't work out that way.
Well, there you go, listeners. That's the case for the prosecution and the case for the defence. If you've got an opinion, you can tweet us at cricketpodblast.
Tweet us.
You can write to us at thecricketpodblast@gmail.com. Or alternatively, you can just shout very loudly wherever you're sitting right now.
And we might hear it. L APL APL APL
APL APL APL APL. The IPL is over, Ross. Who won?
I've no idea.
I've got no idea at all who won.
Damning for us or damning for them?
We're not the only people who don't care. I read the most extraordinary thing today by MS Dhoni, who is being cross-examined, that theme again,
yes,
in advance of the Champions Trophy. He's over here with the Indian side. And he was being asked a series of questions to do with the IPL, obviously, and the whole corruption saga, which I'm sure we'll return to during the course of this episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was asked, and this is according to the Guardian write-up, which I commend to everyone, have a read. Did India need to win this Champions Trophy in which they will face South Africa in the opening match next Thursday? It's only next Thursday,
Ross. Oh, is it?
To silence their critics at home. It's an ongoing process, he says.
Fine. Yeah, sure. I mean,
it's not really an answer, really.
Yeah.
He might as well have just said radiator can.
Yeah.
How much of a personal blow had it been when the Super Kings were beaten by Mumbai Indians? So there you have it, Mumbai Indians, the victors, for those of you that need the news, in last Sunday's IPL final, despite Dhoni's rearguard defiance. The T20 format is a lottery format, said the captain. This is very different. Just a moment here.
Yeah.
He says, how does it feel to lose,
yeah,
despite your performance?
It's a lottery.
In the final, the whole IPL, and he goes, yeah, oh, it's a lottery format.
Yeah.
Don't you find that? That's extraordinary.
It could go
isn't it?
Anyway. Yeah. And is he saying, you know, that it's like flipping a coin?
Yes. And then the question that follows on from that is, just flip a coin.
Yeah, yeah. Why not flip a coin? Get the cheerleaders.
I mean, if there's
get the fireworks.
If there's no link
flip that coin
between ability or effort,
yeah,
and result,
yeah,
flip a coin.
Why is he playing sport if he believes there's no...
Well, he's talking about the IPL in particular.
Yeah.
And this leads on to a very interesting article this week on the ESPN Crick Info website by Ed Smith, a very erudite man, talking about Champions League trophy in the IPL.
Mm.
We're not IPL bashers as many expect us to be simply because we're English.
I enjoy it.
It's fine.
Very much.
I enjoy the IPL more than any foreign cricket league out there.
I haven't watched the others, but I'd like the IPL very much.
I find the fact that I haven't bothered watching the others pretty significant.
Yeah.
I'll watch the IPL.
Yeah, it's not on free-to-air TV.
There we go. I don't want anybody to misinterpret what we're saying. The raising of Ed Smith's argument that the Champions League, there's a direct correlation between financial success and success and effort on the field, whereas in the IPL that's warped.
Mm.
I don't want anybody to think that our highlighting of Dhoni's comments is in any way a bash at the IPL while, you know, kicking the body while it's down because of the corruption saga.
Mm.
But I think that comment from Dhoni, unfortunately, is the truth. It's probably the most revealing thing he said all day,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Is 2020 a lottery, Ross? And if so, why are we playing it?
What's the point of it?
I mean,
if it's purely a lottery. Play a lottery. Play lotto. Play bingo. You know, do the bingo. Maybe he's into bingo more than he's into cricket.
I would love somebody to ask Dhoni whether he's into bingo.
Are you into bingo?
You're in Birmingham this week, Mr. Dhoni. Will you be going down to Mecca Bingo?
Yeah, I think I might. Why is he South African? Everyone else is South African.
MS Dhoni can be as well. So that's the IPL. Just leading on from the IPL very quickly and talking about crowds.
Mm.
Very briefly on the death of Test cricket, people are talking about the fact that lots of... teams are cancelling their test matches and they're playing 2020 and one day as instead.
Yeah, here's the death of test cricket that we promised right at the top of the show.
You that were waiting for it, here it is.
Here it is.
Okay, so interesting point that was made on a programme I was listening to the other day about Romário out in Brazil.
Oh.
And just as a passing fact during the course of this BBC documentary, it said that fewer people go to watch live Brazilian top division football, the equivalent of the Premier League, than Americans go to watch Major League Soccer.
Oh.
Do you find that extraordinary? I mean, compare Brazil as a football-loving nation compared to the Americans.
Yeah.
So I think the point is, when you look at those empty crowds in South Africa for South Africa versus even Pakistan, a really important series, a load of people following, and they're playing in front of empty crowds in South Africa, and then they come over here to England, and the crowds, apart from Headingley on the last day, are full.
Yeah.
Is there really that correlation with the health of Test cricket, after all? Or is the real key, if you're not going to have people at the ground, you've got to have it on terrestrial TV. Because in Brazil, you don't need satellite to watch TV.
Oh, that's interesting.
Having said that, is that the reason people aren't going to games?
Well, this is too much for me to comprehend, Al. You've brought a whole load of wonderful points up. You know, Brazil,
do you want to get back to me in the next episode?
I'm really going to have to think about that. Brazil, do they, is it, and USA, or have they, do you know what? Here's this. People respond to marketing, right? There's a hell of a lot of marketing behind football in the US. You don't need to market football in Brazil. Imagine someone going, hey, there's this thing we've just discovered called football. They're like, yeah, we're really good at it.
I'm surprised you didn't make them South African.
Yeah, we're really good at it. But I think part of it is that. Part of it is putting your money where your mouth is, putting some money behind advertising and really, really pushing the game in all senses that you can. Because football in England is one of the only sports in anywhere that doesn't sell itself. You know, football sport sells itself. You don't need to. But other sports, no matter where they are, and certainly cricket, needs to keep investing and needs to keep pushing the game, I'd say.
Thanks for that, Ross. Wise words from Ross. Those of you who have been listening and were expecting some light-hearted, very witty banter.
No.
Not the right place for witty banter, this programme. We're really into the serious topics. And that's why we're going to go on to something else which really pleased me. So, should we take a moment and travel from Brazil and football to Hampton?
Oh, we're going down to Hampton. It's near Shepperton, if you don't know where Hampton is.
Well, here we are. We're running all the way to amateur cricket on a Sunday. And what an incredible email I got today. It was a team that I used to play for, and I'm still on the email list. Woodlawn CC are the opponents this weekend at Carlisle Park in Hampton in Middlesex.
Yep.
And they have been in email contact with the former side, trying to set up the parameters of the Sunday game.
Okay.
And this is what the email says. I love this. We normally play a timed A Chambers format at home. Brackets, team bats first has 2.5 hours, then tea. Then team who bats second has 1 hour, followed by 20 overs. It ensures all three results are possible, win, lose or draw. This format also fits well with our ethos of playing friendly cricket. Friendly cricket, because limited overs, 40 a side Sunday cricket.
It's aggressive.
Tendency to be unfriendly.
Yeah.
I love the idea of being able to draw in one of those Sunday games as well.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to head down to Hampton as soon as possible. And if you're out there, Woodlawn, have a wonderful season. Good on you.
What a fantastic format. Talking local cricket news, Listen to this. Now, I've cut this out. As Al can see, this isn't usually how I do research. Don't worry, Al. I haven't changed the habit of a lifetime. I haven't gone with some scissors and done a bit of DIY, cut this out just for myself to put in my wallet. I just found this on the tube.
Sure.
That's how I do it. I found it.
Already cut out.
Unbelievable.
Extraordinary.
A county cricket game has been disrupted after vandals dug up a pitch lovingly tended by its groundsman. Pat Ringham of Marchtown Cricket Club said he thought 50 hooligans had been let loose with golf clubs. Yet the culprits were, in fact, crows looking for grubs. Cambridge's home game today against Cumberland will now be played in Wisbech instead of March.
Well, thanks for that update. I don't think we've got anything to add. That's an absolute gem, Ross. And talking of absolute gems, shall we talk about a little gem that the Australians think that they've dug up recently? This is Fawad Ahmed. Have you seen the news today that effectively Australia is changing its entire immigration asylum system in order to get this guy into the Ashes squad?
Well, maybe they've just turned really, really nice and accepting. I hear that he was thrown out of the country because he was supporting a women's NGO. And as such,
that's
he
correct.
Was threatened by Islamic extremists.
Yeah, he
Islamic
sought asylum in Australia. And unlike many people who seek asylum in Australia, he wasn't kept in a boat somewhere off Papua New Guinea, gradually getting thinner. He was welcomed with open arms by the Australian establishment because he could tweak it a bit and he wasn't Michael Beer. And it now looks as if there's been a place reserved for him in the Ashes squad. I know that closer to the Ashes, we're going to be chatting to our Australian correspondent,
Andrew Manskill.
And he'll be able to tell us all about Fawad Ahmed. But he only played 10 first-class matches over in Australia. He's 31. Mm-hmm. And this reeks of desperation to me, doesn't it, Ross? I mean, this is madness. He hasn't bowled that well in Australia. I'm looking at his figures. He's picked up a few wickets here and there, but it's not anything outstanding. He got 4 for 122 in his last game. Mm. He got one fifer in about the last sort of 7-8 games that he's had. He's not exactly ripping through them. And you know, the guy who I really feel bad for at the moment is Nathan Lyon. Because Nathan Lyon has a bowling average of about 32 and has taken a lot of test wickets.
Yeah, he's not a bad player, is he, Lyon?
He's an excellent player to my
he's
mind.
He's got his lion's share of wickets.
He's about 25, 26, and he can go there. I'm ignoring you. So this is all very odd to do with Fawad Ahmed, and we'll have to see how it goes. I'm sure he's a fantastic guy, and I wish him the best, but I don't think that England would be trembling in their boots right now.
I like it because it's even removed from... It's almost like, you know, on the Sunday league, then you go, well, I could call my brother. It's removed from that. It's not even quite the, I guess I'll ring round. It's sort of like, I met a guy in the pub. I think I still have his number.
Yeah.
And he said he might play cricket. That's Fawad Ahmed. Or will he prove us wrong, listener?
Comedy moment here from Ross. He's going to talk about a guy who's smooth, who's well-dressed, and is an ever-present figure in your living room. Yes?
Well, yeah, he lives in my living room and he dresses all in white and he serves me hors d'oeuvres. He's the butler of cricket analysis. It's Mark Nicholas. He doesn't really live in my house. And this isn't going to be funny. Listen, Mark.
It's a pet peeve, isn't
it's
it?
It's a pet peeve, Mark. Mark, and this, if you want a late response to something, stick with a pod blast, because Mark said this in 2010.
Okay.
But Mark said, you all know this already, but Mark said, you know what I'm going to say. Mark said that 8 first-class county cricket teams need to be fair and be less selfish and withdraw their first-class status. Teams including Worcestershire, Northamptonshire and Derbyshire. Now, yes. Mark, we don't all think, like your beloved Hampshire, that cricket is all about being a bit near the sea, riding a horse, probably, and Shane Warne. It's not about that. It's not about big money. Yeah, there are some fantastic great clubs, and they're not as big as yours, although I'm pretty sure Worcester and Northampton have beaten Hampshire a fair few times, Mark, I'll have you remember. But listen, Mark, I love you. I love your commentary. You're the smoothest guy out there. I want to give both sides of this. It's not you, mate. It's your views. They're abhorrent. And if you keep that nonsense up, I'm going to stand outside your house and just keep, you'll just hear this, take it back. Because there's some incredible talent throughout the leagues. A team like Derbyshire had a brilliant season and came back from, you know, being a little known team and a little talented team, but have made fantastic strides. It's that kind of thing that warms my cricketing heart. And if you want
to
take that away from me, wait, Mark, you listen. If you want to take that away from me, if you want to do that, you're going to have to
Mark's
go through me, Mark.
Away.
Mark? Mark? Next week, I'll be responding to cricket news from 1967.
A piece of news for those who have one eye on blind and partially sighted cricket. I can't
No, go on, continue. You've started.
I'll start it, so I'll finish. I got my primary club newsletter the other day. Oh, wonderful. And it has a cry for help in it from the Honorary Secretary, Chris Larlam. He says, after a record year in 2012, this year's revenue is down very substantially, and also new members were down by 50%. The Primary Club is a fantastic cricketing charity, and it is involved in funding all sorts of cricket across the country for people who are blind or partially sighted, and not just cricket, all sorts of other sports and equipment, and a lot of people rely on them. So if you're a fan of cricket, then become a member of the Primary Club and buy one of their snazzy ties.
Or a fan of life, for that matter. Thanks, Al. What a great show it has been, and do bear the Primary Club in mind. Finally, a word for a friend of the show. Well, not technically. Adil Rashid. He's a friend in that I like him, and he's my friend.
Three consecutive centuries for Adil Rashid.
He could make a comeback, and he might. I think he'll soon be vying for that number seven England spot. He can bowl a bit. He can bat a hell of a lot at the moment. Come on, Adil. Keep it going.
Well, have you got a song about Adil that you'd like to share with the listener?
It goes a little like this. What do you think Adil Rashid's current county average is?
It's about 275, isn't it?
It's 252.
Oh,
keep
yeah.
going, Adil Rashid. Tweet us, Adil.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.